Hey everyone, welcome back to Leadership. After taking a 6 month break from the podcast to focus on a pretty busy semester, I'm so thrilled to be back with a new season. There shouldn't be any big changes this season. We're still going to be focusing on women's health topics with a combination of interviews and monologues, and I'm really excited about the lineup of topics that I have planned out for this season. So get excited, everyone. So our first episode, today's episode, is going to tackle the women's health topic of safety and routine in reproduction and birth, which is something that I've been learning a lot about during my time in England and my experiences as a doula. So I hope you find this as interesting as I do. And with that said, let's get into it. I am so excited for this episode. It's on a book that I've been reading lately that makes an anthropological analysis of birth. And the book is called Ways of Knowing About Birth, Mothers, Midwives, Medicine, and Birth Activism. And it's by Dr. Robbie Davis Floyd, who is a renowned anthropologist who has dedicated her career to reproductive anthropology and studying the ways that birth occurs across different settings and contexts. So the book is a collection of her essays and chapters she's written and papers she's published from throughout her career. And I wanted to talk about the second essay in her collection. It's called The Rituals of Hospital Birth, Enacting and Transmitting the Technocratic Model. And it analyzes the way that we approach medicine, that we approach hospital births and how they exemplify the routine-based mechanism of medicine that we often practice. And it is from another book that she wrote, actually, called Birth is an American Rite of Passage, which I think I may want to read next. So this chapter starts to tackle a question that I've been thinking about a lot this past year. Birth is one of the only things that we do in the hospital, even if nothing is majorly wrong, per se. It's a quote-unquote natural process that is meant to happen at the end of pregnancy. So if all is going well medically or quote-unquote normally, then how come we do it in the hospital so regularly? And an important disclaimer here is that I say this as someone who intends to give birth in a hospital one day and someone who plans to become an obstetrician. And one of the things that I hope to do as a physician and obstetrician is to help women give birth in hospital settings. So I'm not someone who is necessarily really critical of hospital birth, but I do think that it's the question of medicalization of birth is an important thing for me and other aspiring women's health professionals to consider. And as I was rambling to someone about this a couple of weeks ago, they recommended this book to me. So I don't think that this chapter necessarily answers the question fully, as it is a pretty compounded issue with a pretty layered set of explanations. But I do think that the framework that Dr. Davis Floyd talks about concerning the standardization of birth in the United States is pretty useful in thinking about how our healthcare system treats people who give birth. The essay by Dr. Davis Floyd considers a lot of the ways that the American hospital system uses what she calls a technocratic and ritualistic model of birth. And when she uses the word technocratic, she is referring to the way that we use technology and scientific knowledge to inform medical processes, as our biomedical system of healing is heavily evidence-based and scientific, as I believe it should be, and it makes use of many forms of technology and research. And a technocratic medical system, as is discussed in the medical humanities, employs this biomedical model and thus views the body as a machine. I'm sure many of you have heard about this before, and as a system to be healed by narrowing down root causes and addressing them as directly and head-on as possible. And this is why I find the application of medicalized birth so interesting, because what specifically is going wrong? And of course, I'm talking about a situation or scenario in which there's nothing that is quote unquote medically wrong. So where mom and baby, or birthing parent and baby, are both progressing throughout the birth healthily. And the ritual is to do this in the hospital. Is that because we expect something to go wrong and we're in the hospital just in case? Is it because of the very historically dangerous nature of childbirth? You know, is it because of the pain that it entails? And I suppose that the reason is slightly different for every birthing parent who comes to the hospital. But I found Dr. Davis Floyd's ideas about the routine of birth really compelling in understanding this question and at least trying to come up with some potential answers. And also, I think I should be really clear here that I'm sure there are many aspects of our modern lifestyle that contribute to making childbirth a much more difficult, dangerous, painful process than it has been in the past. And in fact, I think many women today do not have the time and energy to be able to undergo the birthing process as they did in previous eras or time periods. And I will say, I am trained as a doula, and I think that a lot of birthing parents are now beginning to advocate for things like unmedicated or natural quote-unquote births. And I wonder if this has to do with things like the scary maternal mortality rate in this country and its potential tie to cesarean sections in hospitals, or the trends and stories coming out about bonding and recovery and how that's easier with natural births, or even just the idea of accomplishing something that some people believe to be a rite of passage for womanhood. Although I find this pretty problematic, and I don't believe that birth, whether or not you can give birth, whether or not you do it with medication, I don't think that has anything to do with the definition of womanhood. And although this chapter refers to a process that only women go through, I want to be clear that and recognize that not everyone who gives birth is a woman, and not every woman has the biological capabilities to give birth. So I'm going to do my best to use the term birthing parent as I go forward in this episode. And yeah, I felt like those were some important things to touch on before diving into this book. Okay, so one of the ideas that I found useful in understanding the standardization and procedurization of birth was when the author lays out a series of changes to the quote-unquote ritual of birth in hospitals over a time period. So she starts in the 1970s and 1980s, where she discusses how at this point, hospital birth was extremely technocratic. And a lot of activism actually in the natural birth movement brought about changes such as allowing family members to be present at births, allowing mothers to be awake and conscious during birth, and to be able to walk around if they wished, which is interestingly now what we recommend to progress labor, and some of these things are just kind of what we consider normal now. And the rate of episiotomy actually declined in this era, which for anyone who doesn't know is when a physician cuts into the perineum and vaginal wall, and this is supposed to create more space for the birth. This is an example of a technocratic method that was and still is used during birth. However, a ritual change that did occur is that epidurals and electronic monitoring of the fetus became much more commonly used to provide pain relief in the epidural's case and to provide more information about how the fetus was doing throughout the labor, usually by measuring their heart rate. And another major ritual change is that in 2009, a policy was implemented to ensure that women could not undergo inductions before 39 weeks. And this has been seen by some as a victory because it helps to prevent premature births, which was what had caused it in this ban in the first place, because there were a lot of births taking place or inductions taking place pretty early for many reasons, you know, this was causing a lot of buildup in the NICUs, actually, which is the neonatal intensive care unit for preemie babies, because so many of them were being born prematurely, and many saw this as because of early induction. So this policy was implemented and people were happy about it, but others were not as excited about it because of those instances such as stillborn births where mothers have to wait until week 39 to be induced when maybe they could do it earlier. And this is just like a really painful situation for everybody involved, you know? So this can be understood as a step away from overusing technocratic measures, but it must also be recognized that uniform measures such as this can still harm some people, which I think this was a good example to remind us of that. Now, another change is that we wait to cut the umbilical cord so that the baby can continue to receive blood and oxygen from its parent until the process stops naturally. And this can also be seen as a step away from technocratic measures. And then, of course, there has also been a major change in the way that we carry out cesarean sections, which Dr. Davis Floyd calls the woman-centered cesarean section. And these changes involve C-sections no longer having to be emergencies, so you can schedule them well in advance. You can be awake and have people like your family or doulas there with you. You can be handed your baby right away for skin to skin. And there are a lot of different strategies used to help the mother see the birth happen and see their baby for the first time as they're giving birth. And then, of course, also we've seen a rise in the use of Pitocin during birth, which is the synthetic version of oxytocin, which is a hormone incredibly important in labor progression. And so all these examples, women-centered C-sections and the use of Pitocin, both employ highly technocratic systems of birth. However, we've seen that the C-sections have become less technocratic in their attempted incorporation of a more humanistic model of birth, but then we're getting more technocratic with this use of Pitocin. So I think that laying out these developments in the medicalized or hospital setting of birth is helpful in thinking about the way we've medicalized birth, because our technology allows us more control over the process. And whether that is a good or bad thing is so subjective and so highly debated. And it's something that I don't believe I have the knowledge base or the training to dive into here. But I think it's worth thinking about all these ways that the way we approach birth have changed over time. And I think it's really interesting. I will say, though, that the push for more natural unmedicated births does not mean that this is for everyone. Things like pre-existing conditions, social determinants, poverty, malnourishment, or being overworked, all of these are reasons that non-technocratic births can be really dangerous for women and are indicators of the good that technocratic medicine can do. However, it's really important to remember that what is beneficial to some may not be beneficial to others. And that is why I think works such as this study and set of essays by Dr. Davis Floyd are so important to have in combination with biomedical research. Now, the rest of her chapter gets pretty technical and zooms out a bit from changes in the American birthing model and healthcare model. So I wanted to transition then to some of what I have learned from the midwives here in the United Kingdom. And to give you all some context, I am here to learn about women's and infant health care and the systematic differences from the American system. And I will definitely get into this much more in some of my later episodes, but one of the things that I found to be very different across these contexts, so the US and the UK, is how personalized and customized care can be here in the United Kingdom through a combined model, an integrated model of visits to you, the patient, in the comfort of your own home, with health visitors from the National Health Service and community midwives, as well as visits in the hospital with hospital midwives and specialists, There are many, many opportunities to discuss exactly what is the best plan for you. And now, this isn't to say that it's not possible to make a great plan for your birth with your providers in the US, but I think it is easier for vulnerable populations here in the UK to do this. In fact, if all goes well in this model, you would not even see a physician for your childbirth. And although one of the midwives who I spoke with actually said that this is somewhat uncommon and that people tend to want to see physicians, and I think this is again due to what I was talking about earlier with security and safety and the feeling of having seen a physician just in case, and that's definitely how I would feel. But still, I think it's so interesting how personalized the medical system here can become for those, especially those who need it most. So, and of course, nothing works perfectly, as I've been learning in my time here. But I think that just the action of visiting a patient to talk about their specific needs, rather than them needing to schedule appointments and visit physically a clinic or hospital, or even on telemedicine, it's still on them to schedule that appointment. This potentially removes a pretty major barrier to effective care and could potentially even make for a much smoother and more joyful experience where you still feel safe and in control. And another thing that I've learned from a few of my conversations with the midwives here, without giving too much away, of course, for the upcoming episodes, is that here in the UK, everyone is supposed to register with a general practitioner, and, you know, healthcare is free here, so everyone does. And this is similar to, I guess, a primary care physician for us. And that these general practitioners in the UK are paid based on how many patients they have registered on their lists, not by how many procedures they perform or how many services they provide. So, as this interviewee told me, psychologically, they think there's less incentive to medicalize the birth process because physicians aren't benefiting from technocratic birth in the same way that they might in the United States. And of course, this is super general information about public healthcare systems, so privatized models are different everywhere. But this was such an interesting point to me that it could potentially let birth be less technocratic simply by letting midwives whose sole job is to help mothers through pregnancy and birth, and then potentially help the baby a bit as well before the pediatrician steps in, by letting them handle everything, the midwives. And this lets it be more personalized and maybe even less medical. And I definitely plan to get into this more as I analyze more of the information that I'm learning about from all the lovely practitioners here who are speaking with me, this American who doesn't understand their system very well. But for now, I think I will leave it at that, just with that comparison. So to wrap up this episode, we've gone over a bit of history in the United States medicalized birthing model, and we've understood Dr. Davis Floyd's model of technocratic birth in the US, and we've talked a bit about what I've learned here in the UK. And I hope that all this information about control over the birthing process, routines, personalized care, and all of this are helpful as we consider why birth, a natural, if painful process, takes place in the hospital, even if nothing is necessarily wrong. And if you're wondering, no, I don't think there's a concrete answer, so sorry if you were expecting a definitive opinion from me, but I hope this was an interesting thought exercise. I'm having a blast learning about healthcare models and women's health here in the UK, and I can't wait to share with you what I'm learning. So I think with that, I'll conclude this episode with a huge, huge, huge thank you for coming back for Leadership's fourth year. It's actually insane to me that people keep listening and commenting on what I say about topics that I'm interested in. So definitely send me all of your questions, comments, feedback about this episode and what's to come. And stay safe, and I will see you all next time.